Vice President Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia has commissioned phase one of the reconstruction of the Apiati Township, comprising some 1-2-4 housing units among other ancillary amenities. The facility comes as a relief to victims who lost their livelihood due to an explosion. The Vice President who commissioned the project expressed hope the permanent place of abode will restore the dignity of those affected.
On January 20, 2022, a motorbike rider unfortunately went under a truck transporting explosives for a gold mine in Bogoso. This led to an explosion. People in the community who rushed down to the scene were unfortunately met by a second blast a few minutes later, killing 17 people, injuring many, and destroying dozens of buildings. The Apiati Support Fund was since launched to raise money, among other things, to support the victims of the incident and reconstruct the community. In September 2022, the Apiati Redevelopment Project commenced. Phase 1, which comprises 124 compressed earth brick houses, has been commissioned. Commissioning the facility, Dr. Bawumia commiserated with the victims who suffered the devastation. He commended the efforts of all who contributed to ensure the project materialized.
I'm happy that we have done it together. We owe it to the victims of the incident, their families, and our entire nation to prevent such tragedies in the future.
On his part, the Minister for Lands and Natural Resources, Samuel Abujinapo, reiterated his ministry's condolences to the victims, adding the facility will bring some relief to victims.
If anybody thought that governments do not keep their promises, the Vice President made a promise to the people of Apiati, and this is a promise made, a promise kept. And if anybody thought that governments cannot deliver, President Akufo-Addo and Vice President Mahamudu Bawumia's government has demonstrated that there is a government here in Ghana which is delivering, which will deliver, and which will forever deliver for the people of Ghana, the people of Pisia Huni Valley, and the people of Apiati.
Divisional Chief of the Wasafiasi Traditional Area, Nana Atakwedu Brimbi II, is meanwhile calling for expedited action to complete phase two of the project.
I urge the President and reconstruction team to expedite phase two of the project to assist the remaining victims.
Meanwhile, Vice President Dr. Mahamudu Bawumia has praised the Lands Minister for his hard work in ensuring victims of the Apiati disaster are resettled. He says his leadership will be crucial in helping setting the remaining victims who are yet to find a comfortable place of abode since the disaster 2 years ago.
To the indefatigable Minister for Lands and Natural Resources, Honorable Samuel Abujinapo, who has led this project from the beginning to date, I say thank you for your exemplary leadership and dedication. Your commitment, Minister, and relentless zeal in seeing to the completion of this project has been unwavering. This is why I refer to him as the bulldozer minister. He just clears problems away. He gets things done. I am aware of the several visits, Minister, that you made to this community to assess progress of work and to ensure that the contractors execute the project on schedule. The people of Apiati.
The majority in Parliament this morning is pressing on the Speaker, Alban Bagbin, to recall Parliament for some urgent government business. It includes the approval of President Akufo-Addo's ministerial nominees. Kweku Asante joins us with a copy of that letter to the Speaker. Kweku, what does the letter say? Kweku.
Hello, Aisha.
Yes. Share with us details
well, so Aisha,
of that letter.
This letter was dispatched to the office of the Speaker of Parliament yesterday, addressed by the Majority Leader himself, asking for a recall of the House. If you look at the standing orders, it allows for a side in Parliament to actually invite the House to reconvene for an emergency sitting, with 15% of members of Parliament signing that. The majority side have at least half of Parliament, and so getting 15% is quite an easy feat for them. We understand they've been able to get this 15%, and I've sent this petition to the Speaker of Parliament asking for the House to reconvene to take care of some urgent business, particularly having to do with the approval of ministerial nominees. So many of the President's nominees are trying to act as ministers, and we understand they've been writing letters to act as the President's representative in those ministries. But they need to be officially approved to be able to do their work. And so the majority side want to get that. There are also some loan agreements that are on the other paper as at the time Parliament was adjourning that has not been taken care of. That has to also be dealt with. And a number of tax waivers. So these are the focal points that the majority believe the House must reconvene to take care of those businesses. Inside Parliament, we expect that any moment from now, the majority leader himself will address journalists, answer questions about why it is important for the House to reconvene to consider these.
All right, so we'll be going to Parliament for more on this as and when the majority addresses the press. Kweku Asante is there for RAS. Let's get on to other stories. Deputy Minister Designate for Information, Sylvester Tete, has pledged to support the repeal of a provision in the Criminal and Offences Act, 1960 Act 29, which identifies a journalist to have committed a misdemeanor if found to have published or reproduced an information which is likely to cause fear and panic or to disturb the public peace, knowing or having reason to believe that the information is false. Sylvester Tete asks the NPP government has condemned attacks on journalists on numerous occasions and cannot be solely blamed for Ghana's recent poor performance on the press freedom rankings.
As Ghana joins the rest of the world to mark World Press Freedom Day, questions about media freedom in the country continue to be asked. The country has dropped more than 30 places since 2018, from 23rd in that year to 62nd in 2023. One of the laws that can cause the arrest of a journalist is the Criminal and Offences Act, 1960 Act 29, which says a person who publishes or reproduces false information commits a misdemeanor. But the Deputy Information Minister Designate, Sylvester Tete, who defended the attacks on journalists that have taken place since President Akufo-Addo took office, said he will support a bill to repeal the Criminal and Offences Act if presented before Parliament.
If you look at all the infractions that has happened over the last 5 years, I doubt if all the infractions are infractions directly coming from political actors. There are non-political actors as well that has contributed to these infractions we are talking about. That's why I keep making the point as a shared responsibility. Education, advocacy, reforming our laws. Look, there are occasions that the ministry itself or government itself had to issue statements condemning the police action on some of these matters. I've shared that position that personally going forward. Today I'm in government, tomorrow I may not be in government. That is how life is. Tomorrow I'll end up perhaps practicing as a journalist. So if I help to ensure that the space, the ecosystem is free and fair, it benefits everybody and entrenches democracy. So nobody is taking that it is stuck that you can't do anything about it. So if us, you know.
So you're in favor of repealing it?
We should. I mean, as a matter of fact, we should.
Okay. Executive Director of Media Foundation for West Africa, Suleimana Brahma, bemoaned the rate at which politicians are starting to own media companies which are used for political propaganda, and called for a law to be implemented that will ensure that media owners have the capacity to pay their workers before they are given license to operate.
A lot of them are set up by politicians, you know, an MP, and you can name them, you know them. And so it's all about, if my party is in power, I use my position to go for a frequency, set up a radio station in my village to do the propaganda for me as the MP for the area. So I think the first thing is to have regulations that would set up certain parameters on who is qualified to have a radio station in terms of your management capacity, your resource capacity, the capacity to recruit at least a minimum number of professional journalists to be able to operate.
Professor Audrey Gadekpo is the Dean of the School of Information and Communication Studies at the University of Ghana.
We know that there's a lot of talk, a lot of concern about disinformation. We're about to go into elections, and I worry, and I know that our lives are going to be miserable, because now we even have AI, and AI is allowing all kinds of things to happen. So there is a lot to be concerned about, and we ought to insist.
Deputy Executive Secretary of the National Media Commission, Alexander Ni Kate Bannerman, said the commission is trying its best to protect the safety of journalists.
If you talk about safety of journalists, I was at Class FM today, and I asked them, why didn't they report? We have seen it, and we've been there. Actually, it's with the police investigating. So I encourage them that last year we held a program with Ministry of Information on the status of some of these infractions. So I encourage them that they should get us the chronology of events so that we can do a follow-up with the police.
The theme for this year's World Press Freedom Day is A Press for the Planet, Journalism in the Face of the Environmental Crisis.
Well, Ghana has moved from the 62nd position on the World Press Freedom Ranking to 50th, an improvement from the previous position. Let me share excerpts of the latest report with you. And Ghana's rank globally is 50th out of 180 countries. A lot more has been said there. So this is Ghana's rank globally comparatively. In 2018, it ranked 23rd. In 2019, 27th. 2020, 30th. In 2022, it ranked 60th, 2023, 62nd. So you can see that it's been worsening over the period. In 2024, we are back at 50. Are there factors that contributed to this? So this accumulates 67.71% of the score. Now, let's look at factors that may have contributed to this. And before we talk about the factors, these are the percentage accumulation of how we've performed. Now, if you look at the indicators, it says that on political grounds, we scored 61.88%, and it comes to 59.50%. That is in 2024. On economic grounds, 47.94% in 2023. And then in 2024, it now gets to 47.92%. Now, legislative-wise, 79.62%. And in 2024, 74.41%. And if you look at the status, you can tell that it's all bad signal, which is red, showing. The only one that is taken green is 61.25%, which is security. If it comes to social, it's even worse, which is 79.98%, representing 73.41% in 2024. So in 2023, it was worse. 2024, it's become a little better, but it's still red. Security-wise, it's improved, which is 82.94%, which is taken green. And so it's if you look at generally Ghana's performance as 50 on the index out of 180 countries, not really much that was done, but it's actually a problem with press freedom globally, which is actually making Ghana come 50th, because if you look at the status over there, it's all ticking red, which is giving you only security as the improvement that we've had. I away from World Press Freedom Day, the Ghana Health Service has intensified efforts to tackle maternal mental health issues affecting the well-being of women during pregnancy delivery and the period of up to 1 year after delivery. Statistics over a 10-year period between 2003 and 2023 revealed a high prevalence of perinatal depression of up to 50% in Ghana. 15% of the number is said to have been presented with suicidal ideation recorded over the same period.
Maternal mental health refers to the state of emotional and psychological well-being of the woman during pregnancy, delivery, and the period up to 1 year after delivery. Identified as a critical mediator between social adversity and poor infant growth, research shows reported absent routine antenatal and postnatal screening for maternal mental health disorders in Ghana. Coupled with the lack of awareness and stigma due to low formal healthcare-seeking behavior among affected women, inadequate access to maternal mental health services, among others, Ghana's cases are above the globally reported 10% of suicidal ideation figures. To change this narrative, Ghana Health Service has been training nurse managers, public health nurses, and midwives to adequately position them to tackle the menace. A psychiatrist with the Ghana Health Service, Dr. Francis Opong, tells Joy News, some women who present with maternal mental health conditions end up as prayer camps, as society lives in a state of denial.
We only get severe cases where mothers are throwing their children away, not breastfeeding and taking proper care of them. Even that, it's about 1 to 2 out of 10 that will find their way to a healthcare facility for attention. On the basis of that, most people will believe that it is spiritual, and so they should end up in some spiritual health centers, which eventually worsens the situation.
The Ghana Health Service, through the implementation of its maternal mental health policy, is encouraging the general public to pay attention to mental health of pregnant women and new mothers, while advancing the knowledge of health workers to attend to such conditions. Ashanti Regional Director of Health Services, Dr. Emmanuel Kojotinkran, underscores the importance of the policy.
Pregnancy itself is a very stressful condition because it's associated with a number of risks. So every pregnant woman is under stress, and sometimes it can become protracted, and if you're not careful, you may lose the woman, or the woman may progress into what we call full-blown psychiatry condition. So under the policy, we are to create awareness for people to know that during pregnancy, you may have some of this condition, and then prepare people's mind, the caregivers, and then the family, that they have to take a very good look at the pregnant woman and then the woman who has just delivered.
Meanwhile, the Ashanti Regional Mental Health Coordinator, Faustina Nyako, is calling for support from partners to reduce the burden of depression among pregnant women.
When someone is pregnant, they go through a lot of changes in the body, and it stresses them, so encourage them. Husbands should take good care of their wives, because two people who get pregnant, not one. But we do a lot of things. When your wife is pregnant, it's now that you're going to look for another woman to satisfy you. Stay with the woman, encourage, and give what? Tough money too. Don't keep it for your girlfriends.
The Ghana Health Service has lined up a series of training workshops for its staff. From Kumasi, for Joy News, Wahime Interior reporting.
St. Joseph's Catholic Clinic at Kwasi in the Winche municipality of the Bono region has been upgraded to a primary hospital to serve the growing medical needs of the people in the area. The facility was upgraded through a partnership with the German government, which provided a grant of 285,000 euros for medical equipment and construction of additional buildings. Correspondent Nestor Kafu Ajuma witnessed official inauguration and now reports.
St. Joseph's Catholic Hospital at Kwasi in the Wenchi municipality of the Bono region was established in 1978 as a 12-bed clinic to cater for the health needs of the Esoja communities. The health facility has gone through several transformations to become a 95-bed primary hospital today. President of the Ghanaian community in Niederbayern, Germany,
Kwame Abrefa Busia facilitated the financial assistance from the German government to secure the needed infrastructure and equipment for the upgrade.
I decided to apply for the German aid to support this good cause. So it was a very long process, a very cumbersome, a very time. I spent sleepless nights pushing the application through and as God has done, I was able to manage to get the 75% of the total cost of this project, which is 380,000 euros. Now, this 380,000 euro, the German government paid 75% of the total cost.
Wow.
Now, we have the facilities. We have 95 bed capacity. We have a lot of wards over there, theater, and we are able to equip the facility at least to start with. Now, we couldn't supply everything we needed through the application, but I hope that the good people of Wenchi, when they see these facilities, they will also contribute their quota to supplement what the German government has done so far.
The executive director of the Christian Health Association Ghana, Dr. Peter Kwame Yeboah, stated that the hospital has a potential to become a center of excellence.
On behalf of the Christian Health Association of Ghana, let me congratulate this facility for transitioning from a clinic to a fully fledged hospital. The transition shows stewardship, excellence, resilience and stability in the entire health sector. And that highlights the prospects and potentials of this facility to grow into a center of excellence. And so we are highly pleased to be associated with the growth of this great facility.
He further said, St. Joseph's Catholic Hospital at Kwasi is a strategic national asset.
This facility is located closer to a major highway, Kumasi, Techiman, Wenchi, Bole, Bamboi, Wa, all the way to Burkina Faso. And therefore, this is a national asset. It is a good Samaritan hospital because it is everybody's hospital. Anyone traveling on this route can enter here. And therefore, this is a national facility of strategic importance.
The management of the hospital appealed for the provision of an ambulance and other vehicles for use. Nesta Kafui Ajuma reporting from Kwasi in the Wenchi municipality of the Bunu region.
Construction works have begun on some inner city roads of the Volta regional capital Ho with funding from World Bank. The project, which falls under the Ghana Secondary Cities Support Program being implemented by the Ministry of Local Government and Rural Development, would see the selected roads receiving bitumen surfacing for the first time with some drainage works. There's more in this report.
Under the Ghana Secondary Cities Support Program, some roads in the Volta regional capital of Ho would see some facelift. The roads that would be constructed with a grant from the World Bank are the Bob Kofi CK Road, Blisam Zion Junction, Chaco Market Road, Ahwen Public Toilet Junction Heve Road, and Barracks Newtown Road, among others. Opeña Construction and Fetsky Limited have been engaged to undertake the construction of the selected suburb roads. Gabriel Kweku Dega works with Bans Consult Limited, the supervising agency.
And now on the surface dressing of the road, which also include all those roads that I've mentioned. Blisam Zion Junction, Scrub Road, and the Market Chaco Road. That's the work we are doing. As at this stage now, you are seeing, we are doing our primacy for the various places that I've mentioned.
So after the priming, what happened?
After the priming, we are coming to do a seal. That is the first seal. And then after that, we do the second seal. In the local language, we say first quota, second quota, third quota. So after that, then we do line marking of the road, design of the road, and then the signposts in the various areas of the road.
Some storm drains in the capital would also be constructed to ease the devastation effect of perennial floods. The Home Municipal Chief Executive, Divine Borson, said the road construction forms the core of an agenda to flood the municipality with development projects.
Before we can fill the whole urban status, we should also be doing development so that in the future we will de-urbanize whole, so that the urbanization will start affecting the peripheries of whole. That is how we plan a city. So we must load whole with development, so that when the whole is overloaded with development, all other municipalities and districts in the region. And that is why we are doing this now. This fund is only meant for the main urban area. That's why the name goes secondary city. We must build city.
Residents have lauded the initiative, but entreated the contractors to ensure value for money and construct the roads to perfection. Fred Kwame Asari, Joy News, Ho.
Joy News can exclusively report that the Office of the Special Prosecutor has begun investigations into alleged corruption in respect of public elections involving the Member of Parliament for Kwadaso and some Electoral Commission officials during the Ejisu by-election. Investigators from the OSP have arrested and questioned a number of interested parties as it delves into the corruption allegations. The Member of Parliament for Kwadaso, Professor Kingsley Nyako, was caught on Joy News' TV cameras giving an envelope to some officials of the Electoral Commission at the Church of Pentecost polling station at Femiswa during the Ejisu by-election. The Electoral Commission has since suspended the two officials as it calls for criminal investigations into their conduct. My colleague Ohemin Teria, whose camera caught the incident, joins us on the via Zoom for more on this. Ohime, what other details can you share with us?
Yes, Aisha, the information I have picked is that investigators from the Office of the Special Prosecutor zoomed into action immediately on Tuesday after the video on the incident was captured live on Joy News TV. So since a Tuesday, the investigators have hit the Ashanti regional capital, Kumasi, trying to engage and also arrest and speak to a number of interested parties whose may be an important part of their investigations. So what we do know is that a number of interested parties, initially I thought the prosecutors would be dealing with only, for instance, the two electoral officers and then the Member of Parliament and some other witnesses. But now what we are learning is that more interested parties have been arrested and they are being interrogated by the Office of the Special Prosecutor.
Do you know if the Member of Parliament himself, I'm talking about Professor Kingsley Nyako, whether he's among those arrested and questioned?
It is not clear whether he has been reached and he's been arrested and questioned, because what I'm learning is that there is a parliamentary immunity. So it is not too sure, or I'm not too sure whether Professor Kingsley Nyako is among those who have been arrested and are being interrogated by investigators from the Office of the Special Prosecutor. But I can confirm that a number of interested parties have been arrested and questioned. And it is not too sure whether these officers will be granted bail in the soonest possible time. I can't really confirm, because my sources at the regional police headquarters and other places where I have been combing to get information, it's not too sure as to what will happen next to these interested parties.
who have been arrested and been interrogated by the Office of the Special Prosecutor.
Well, Humanitaria is our man on the ground. We'll definitely bring you more as and when we get this for you on Joy News and in our subsequent bulletins. Thank you, Humanitaria, for that. Well, Joy News has checks from at least two of the listed ECG substations revealing no evidence of flooding. The Electricity Company of Ghana, in a statement dated May 2nd, 2024, said the recent power outages experienced at some parts of Accra was as a result of flooding at some substations caused by Wednesday morning rainstorms. James Aveji was in town and some checks on the situation. He reports there is nothing of that nature.
The ECG substation H proper, where the machines have been installed, you could see the third ground of the substation, and not debating any evidence of flood, as the ECG has communicated. I earlier got in touch with the security on duty who would not speak to us on record, who directed us to the manager in charge, who would also not reveal his full identity and speak to us on record. But when I mentioned to him that the communication from the ECG is that the substation have been taken by flood by last two nights' rainstorm, he was taken aback. He tells me that there has not been any incident of flood at the substation here at the ECG station H. If you look closely at the substation, the grounds, as you can see, are well tarred. No evidence of flood in the past few weeks, as my non-technical eye could see. And so that is the situation here. The officer who spoke to us off record and the security tells us that there has not been any incidents of flood here at the Achimota substation H. Earlier, we've been to Aveno, the station D, and they complained that the light actually went off earlier in the morning and has since not returned. And where did the carry go?
I carry them go at Salaboche.
Why?
I want to go do some work, but I don't have light here. That's why.
Well, what you carry they do?
I go sow some tapoli.
I mean, today be the first time we, because of light, they carry go another place.
Today's the first time.
The first time.
Yeah.
When the time the light go off?
This morning, early in the morning. By 6.
Mm-hmm. So you don't know when it will come back?
I don't know yet.
As if you do like this, how do you affect your business?
Okay, to affect me small, because you see, if you not get light, you can't do work. So you can't say you not gonna affect us.
I see. You will charge the person extra because you go burn fuel for car them.
Yeah, by all means, that one there.
The person will pay.
For pay.
What you go tell the person before you go add more?
I go tell him say my place no light. So I carry the machine to go different location. Pay me for that.
You talk to the person, you agree already?
You agree already.
You agree already. I see. How much for pay, roughly? Wait, how much be the topper?
Well, that one, yeah. No, you don't go to talk.
I don't go pump and for some place. I don't go do and for some place because of no light. So if a light there, I don't go if you carry the tie, go some place. But no light, light no off. Because of my get boys here, then we go evening time, everybody go get money chop. Me, I get pickings for house. That room, tomorrow, them two go school. So you have to look them. Because of me, I no go, even no light, I no go fit sit down. Because of the boys, you go give them money evening time. So you have to go do the work for some place.
From the ECG substation, each year at Achimota in Accra, my name is James Aveji for Joy News. And there's no light at Aveno area.
Former President John Dramani Mahama is promising to reopen investigations into the Cecilia Dapa scandal if he is re-elected president. John Mahama's comments comes on the back of an attorney general advice to Iyoko, which effectively ends investigations into the former sanitation minister's case. The AG's office described a request from the special prosecutor to Iyoko to probe the former sanitation minister for money laundering as unnecessary and baseless. But in a social media post, the 2024 NDC flag bearer said the case is far from close, adding his government will go back into that case. Meanwhile, anti-corruption crusader Vitus Azim has been blaming the special prosecutor for the way he conducted the interview in the Cecilia Dapa case.
It defeats the fight against corruption. And that's what I've even said, that nobody's fighting corruption in this country. We just speak about it. We're not fighting corruption. The matter did not need to be go to the Attorney General at this stage. Eyoko could have just even put aside the referral of the Office of Special Prosecutor and investigated this matter on its own.
Has the Special Prosecutor's Office, has it also lived to expectation in this matter? Should we lay some of the blame at the doorstep of the Special Prosecutor's Office?
Yes, I think so, because if you were passing the case on to Eyoko, you needed to give, and you wanted Eyoko to work on what you had already, to build on what you had already done, then you needed to give to Eyoko all the information that you have. If you fail to do that, then of course there was suspicion that either you did a poor job or you did not want Eyoko to use the information, the evidence that you found, to continue with the action. And these are some of the things that happen when it comes to investigating high-profile cases. It refers to about two or three institutions who muddy the water, and that's a very unfortunate situation.
Director General of the National Lottery Authority, Samuel Uku, has urged parents to refrain from imposing career choices on their children and instead guide them towards pursuing their interests. Speaking at the Accelerator Project Career and Mentorship Seminar hosted by Space for Life and Shell Oil Foundation, he emphasized the need for stakeholders to collaborate in bridging the gap between academic learning and the demands of the job market. Rejoice Semefa, story read to you.
The Accelerator Project, with the slogan Building a Bold New World, is a triple sector initiative focused on empowering the younger population through STEM education, literacy improvement, and mentorship. It utilizes the synthetic literacy program to enhance reading skills and offers students from both public and private schools training in life skills and community development projects. The project, powered by the Specs for Life Foundation, Shell Oil Foundation, and KGL, seeks to solve the uncertainty and inability of the youth to make career choices, the high illiteracy rate that exists among the beneficiary communities, and the underexploited arena of STEM. Director General of the National Lottery, Samuel Awoko, has appealed to parents to assist in guiding their children's career decisions, underscoring the importance of parental support in nurturing young individuals to make informed and fulfilling choices about their future paths.
You get to a family and the parents insist that my child shouldn't necessarily be a doctor. My child should necessarily be a lawyer. The child may not have the interest in that area. And sometimes what the kids are used to or what you see them practicing, if you engage them further, that's what they have so much interest in. So I think it's a combination of the factors. And also the way we also look down on some of the professions. Look, all professionals can boast, but the teacher taught them all. But maybe somebody will look at the current circumstances of teachers worldwide, or let's say even in Africans. I don't want my child to be a teacher. But that is the child, maybe for him or her, it will be a calling in that particular sector and how to get it done. So for me, I think that parents, the teachers, must also help identify some of these things that the child shows so much interest in. I think with the current introduction of these STEM-related courses and all, the world is definitely giving you an announcement that it has made a shift into the future. And for whatever that we practice in learning in our curricula, we must be deliberate in helping these kids right from the bottom have this at the back of their mind that this is what the future holds. And then we plan our curricula as well to factor these things into it. Again, on the stakeholders bit and how to make sure we get all of them into the whole space, there must be a brutally frank conversation with the stakeholders in the educational sector, the parents as well, on how we can get through it.
We can be anything. We can take journalism to wherever we want to take it.
Media personality Ohinyere Giftianti emphasizes the importance of motivating teachers to excel in their roles, particularly in guiding young individuals or students toward making informed career decisions.
Now we've become very much individualistic, just me, myself, and I, my family, my husband, yeah. But that is why, again, I say that we need to be intentional and deliberate. We need to empower teachers. Teachers don't have to become teachers just because they don't have anything to do, but they have to become teachers because they believe in impacting and guarding the young ones to live their dreams. They need to be proud of their profession as teachers. Love it and understand that they play a pivotal role in shaping society. I respect every single teacher, and I tell my daughter's teacher that I'm struggling with just one child. I can imagine what you're doing with, you know, the number of children they have in there. So it has to be a concerted effort from government to parents to community to teachers to whoever is involved. I believe in adding the guidance of confidence building and communicating and, you know, championing their own courses, letting their parents understand, you know, not just defy them and be arrogant and rebellious, but let them understand. So as we talk to the children, we talk to the parents as well, to understand that we live in a different world now.
Some students shared highlights from the seminar.
And what I learned is how to be confident and how to learn your career. And for today, I learned that you should be confident in whatever you do. And my mentor for today is Nana Yere, Gifty Auntie. And I wish I could talk to her, but maybe because of time she went somewhere. So, and I wish I could get some of her books, but maybe I can get one. So I thank her for what she did today, and I appreciate it.
And today, the time I came here, I learned a lot. I learned how to be passionate and how to build up my career. I saw plenty of people like Ohene Yere and the ministers and the CEOs. I thank God for bringing me here so far.
The event also highlighted the importance of stakeholders working together to close the disparity between academic education and the requirement of the workforce.
Thank you.
Let's now take you to Parliament, where the majority in Parliament is this morning jumping to the defense of the GRE-SML deal, insisting no wrong has been occasioned. The NDC and some civil society organizations have been demanding the termination of the contracts following the issuance of government's white paper after a KPMG audit. The majority leader, Afenyo Markings, has warned his NDC colleagues and CSOs against posturing that could destroy indigenous Ghanaian businesses. He's also been speaking about the letter for the Speaker to recall Parliament.
To get the needed revenue for social intervention. Because when government is able to create the space, the enabling environment for the private sector to thrive, government by extension will get revenue through the PAYE, other profit tax, and these monies can be used to sustain social intervention programs such as the free SHS, to build our schools, to build our roads, construct hospitals, and get government machinery running. So I would encourage our colleagues to have a second look, rethink, and support us with the 1D, 1F. So these are the three items that we are anchoring our recall on. Now, whether or not the majority caucus is invoking its rights under the law in good faith, my answer is yes, we are. As far back as the 8th of April, I, on behalf of colleagues, sent a memo to Mr. Speaker. In that memo, my humble prayer to Mr. Speaker was for him to exercise discretion under the powers given him in orders 53, 57, and 58. Unfortunately, my prayer was not successful. So we took the first major step. We are left with no option than to invoke our rights under Article 1123 of the Constitution. For the avoidance of doubt, Article 1123 of the Constitution provides, notwithstanding any other provision of this article, 15% of members of parliament may request a meeting of parliament, and the speaker shall within 7 days after the receipt of the request summon parliament. Now, this constitutional imperative has found space in our new rules book, the rules book of the house, that is the standing orders, order 53. So order 53 is also repeating, as it were, the provisions in the constitution. And again, I shall proceed to read 53, 1 and 2 together. 53, 1, quote, despite any other provision, 15% of the members of parliament may request a meeting of parliament, and the speaker shall within 7 days after the receipt of the request summon parliament. 2. Parliament shall convene within 7 days after the issuance of the notice of summons. So we are fortified by law to proceed with our prayer. Therefore, in terms of these, we have initiated the process to trigger this, and we do so, like I said, in good faith and for the good of our democracy. We understand that our colleagues have their own views. Our colleagues in the minority have their own views. We can't take those views away from them. After all, we are not the same. We are two political parties competing for power. They have their ideological views, we have ours. So I will not fault them if on this occasion they disagree with us. In any event, we work together. In politics, expect disagreement. But such disagreement should not obstruct us. So they've made their case. We understand them. But it is our view that we have our 138 as a majority, and we should be able to carry government business. The Constitution talks about 15% of the total membership of parliament, which, if my mathematics is right, is 42. But I'm going to tell you on authority that we have more than 100 of our members who have signed the said prayer, which is titled Notice of Meeting by Request under Article 1123 and Order 53 of the Standing Orders.